If you've experienced a DNA surprise, you know that your emotions can range from shock to denial to grief to anger to confusion to joy and around again. And sometimes it's hard to find people who understand this unique experience. Sometimes we feel a little stuck as we navigate this journey. That's why we created the DNA Surprise Retreat. At the DNA Surprise Retreat, you'll enjoy 6 expert-led sessions to help you process your DNA surprise. You'll eat delicious catered meals, and most importantly, you'll build beautiful friendships with people who understand you, all in a stunning private ranch facility in the Arizona desert. If you've had shocking DNA test results, know that you're not alone. This retreat is for you. Join us September 19th through the 22nd, 2024 in Phoenix, Arizona. Registration is open now. Reserve your space at dnasurpriseretreat.com. I'll see you there.
Even still, sometimes, you know, you just got to kind of reel yourself back a little bit and you have a face to look at and think, this is your biological dad.
Imagine spitting into a tube, sending off your DNA, and unknowingly turning your life upside down. For me and thousands of others, this is our reality. I'm your host, Alexis Auerselt. In July of 2021, I discovered that I am an NPE, someone who has experienced a non-paternal event. In other words, my biological father isn't who I thought he was. This podcast shares the journeys of people who were shocked by a DNA discovery, mostly through modern DNA testing. We're telling the stories of NPEs, adoptees, and donor-conceived people and their families. This is DNA Surprises. When the parents in a DNA surprise story are no longer alive to answer questions, their children are left to investigate. In this week's episode, Sherry discusses her NPE discovery, including the months of painstaking research she did while trying to identify her biological father. Sherry talks about how she put the pieces together, why she views her surprise as a blessing, and why she has empathy for her mother. She also discusses her book, My Family Tree, Taken to the Grave, and how writing her story was therapeutic for her. Thank you for sharing your story, Sherry.
My name is Sherry Klosterman. I'm 61 years old, and I'm from Brestwood, Kentucky. So my DNA surprise story started very surprising. I don't know, that's kind of a cliche, but basically I had no real, and I don't say interest, but it wasn't that it was, I was more into the genealogy of things and building a family tree. The DNA was kind of like not even a forethought in my head. My mom had started kind of a family tree on her side, and it just, genealogy just sounded really interesting. And so I thought, well, let's just see, you know, what we can find. Is there anybody famous in our family? You know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't until my mom passed away in 2011. So it wasn't until after she passed away that I thought, well, you know, if you do a DNA test, you kind of get more of your ethnicity backgrounds and you get more health history and those sort of things. So that's kind of where that all kind of came into play. And then once my husband thought I was kind of silly, he goes, well, what do you want to do your DNA for? And I'm like, well, you know, just for, you know, I have some health history issues in our family. And so I had a brother that, you know, was diabetic. I have a bleeding disorder. So I just kind of thought, well, you know, if you can just kind of find out those kind of things, and if it helps anybody along the way, then, you know, it's beneficial.
Right.
So that's kind of how it all began. And like I said, I was just really naive about even having a thought that something could be off, if you will. And when I got my results back, okay, so these are people I've got DNA with, and nobody in our family had ever really done anything like that before. So I was kind of like the first person, I've got DNA percentages. I didn't know what percentages meant. So, and this was back in 2016. So this has been a few years back.
And you just took the test because of just curiosity around that medical side. So you had no inkling that there might be a DNA surprise.
No, not in my wildest dream ever. Growing up, our family was, we were just the, typical family, any kind of a surprise was not even a thought in my head.
So you get these results and do you learn anything on the medical side?
So I get the results and if it's okay to say, I did 23andMe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, very informative, and it was, it didn't give me a whole lot of, information as far as like this bleeding disorder I have or anything like that, but, it does give you some health history. So, and what you might be predisposed to and things like that. So it's very, it was very informative, but, and I look on here and I'm like, look at all these people I have DNA with. And I'm like, there's like 10% here, 11% here. And I'm like, is that a big number? Like, I don't know. nothing like even put a question in my head. Like I just didn't even really, So for a while I just didn't even pay that much attention to it, because I knew my family, we grew up in Kentucky. I knew my mother's family came from Indiana and so on and so forth. But these were people in Louisiana. And I'm like, well, that's kind of odd, I don't know anybody in Louisiana. I was only there once as a kid in high school, so it was like, I don't know anybody in Louisiana. But again, I didn't really put a whole lot of thought into it. And then every now and then, I would get messages from people, hey, does this surname, is this in your family, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, none of these kind of sound familiar. So none of the surnames ever matched up. One day I spoke to my sister, and this has probably been, a year or two after this was all done. And my sister's 20 years older than me. So I was the late in life kind of kid. My parents were 41 and 45 when I was born. So totally unexpected. I can remember my mom saying she didn't think she was ever going to have any more children. She hadn't planned on having any more children. And here I am. So, accidents happen. So when my sister, she proceeds to tell me a lot of things about my dad that I didn't know, obviously. And so my dad died when I was 12. So, and that in itself was pretty traumatic. When you're a young child and you lose a parent very suddenly, he died of a heart attack. Not having your dad growing up, it's different. So it was just my mom and I growing up. And so my sister kind of filled me in on things that I didn't know about my dad. So when I told her that, hey, by the way, I've got people that I'm supposedly, I guess I'm related to, that live in Louisiana. And she's like, really? And I'm like, yeah. She said, well, maybe dad had some children, that we never knew about. My dad frequented, beer depots and things like that when my siblings were very young. So he was a good provider for the family. He probably, I guess you could say, he wasn't the best husband. He didn't mistreat my mom in any way, but, he just wasn't home a lot. Yeah. So, kind of led us to believe that, we probably have some family out there we just didn't know about. So that kind of sparked a curiosity to dig a little deeper.
How did you feel about that idea that your dad maybe had another child out there?
Well, it was kind of like, wow, this is kind of interesting. We might have other siblings out there that we never knew existed, my father dying when I was 12 and my mom lived to be 92. She lived a great life, so nobody was here to ask, so we just kind of like, we might have siblings out there we don't know about, So, but again, I thought, well, none of these names are going to match up. That's probably why, because you know, if my dad had, you know, children out there that we never knew about, obviously they live in another state, or, you know, maybe they were passing through, because my family really never left the state of Kentucky. So it was like, well, this is kind of interesting. You know, we just kind of laughed about it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was just kind of, okay, well, let's see what we can find out here, you know? So then I kind of started looking a little deeper. I have a sister and a brother still living. There were five of us growing up, and my oldest brother and my middle brother, who was diabetic, have passed away. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, you know, if you get a male in the family to do DNA, then you can kind of get more of the paternal side of your DNA and, you know, try to get more information, if you will. And so I had a nephew, actually my brother who had passed, his son, he's like, well, I'll take it, you know, because with my brother being diabetic, and thought it would be helpful for, you know, their family. He does his DNA and it comes back, you know, he matches to me, obviously he's my nephew, and it's like 12 something percent. But the only thing I thought was kind of curious, I thought, I matched to this lady in Louisiana, like at 10 something percent, and I have absolutely no idea who this person is. Whereas I matched 12% to my nephew, who I've known my whole life. And that was the only thing I was like, well, that's kind of weird, you know?
Yeah, you're making the connections that,
yeah,
this person had to be kind of close to you genetically, yes, even if, exactly, you didn't know who they were.
Yeah, had no idea. And she had reached out to me, actually, and we were trying to, like, again, match surnames, and she'd lived in Louisiana all her life and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just like, gosh, this is crazy. Like, no names, like, match up. Like, I just, nothing, you know? And I was just like, this is so weird. 6 months, you know, whatever goes by, and I don't really think that much about it. And then, so my sister and I, you know, we talked a little bit more, and she was like, well, I wonder what would happen if I did my DNA. And in my head, I'm thinking, well, I mean, it's going to be the same like mine, you know? And I'm like, and then I look back, I'm like, well, that was really stupid to think that. So the first thing I notice is she matches to our nephew at like 24%. And I was like, why could she matches more to him than I do, you know? Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's weird. And then I look at her and I, and we matched at about 20, I think it was like right around 24%. And with not even really knowing anything, just in my own head, I'm thinking, well, shouldn't siblings be closer to 50? Like, duh, you know? And I look down and it says predicted relationship, have siblings. And I went, oh shit. And then it was just like, and I'm sure, you know, as other listeners can relate, there's just this, oh my God. And it just like a ton of bricks just fell on me. And I'm like, oh my God, it's not dad. It's, yeah, my mom. Yeah. And I lost it. I absolutely lost it. And I was at home by myself, and it was, there were no words there. I don't know if it was shock. I don't know if it was just disbelief. Like, is this real? Like, is DNA doesn't lie, you know? Mm-hmm. It's your imprint. This is you. And again, like, everybody can relate to this. It's just an unbelievable feeling that you can't even describe.
I mean, when you realized that it was your mom, what did you think?
Well, I think probably one of my first thoughts was, well, you know, you think about how or what's going on, you know, it just, the blindsidedness of it all was just a lot to take in. I just sat here, and, you know, and then my thought process went to when I was a kid, and how when I was a kid, people would say, you know, you're the mailman's kid, you know, there was such a disparity, not say a disparity, but my brother and I, there's like 10 and a half years between us, you know, between him and me, and he's the next one in line. And, you know, you were such the late in life kind of kid, you know, you were probably the mailman's kid, ha ha ha. You know, those were just kind of little jokes that, you know, you would hear growing up. And all my brothers and sisters have blue eyes. My parents have blue eyes. I have brown eyes. I have brown hair. I have more darker hair features than any of my siblings. But even then, growing up, I mean, nothing was ever thought of anything different, wrong. Is she, you know, marrying Charles's kid? You know, I mean, none of that. But, you know, we're talking about the 60s, too. Like, you know, I was born in 61. DNA wasn't a thing, obviously. But when I sat there and looked at that computer, and I just, there was just such a shock. Like, yeah, you know, it took me a while. It took me a long time to come to terms with that.
Yeah. Did you call your sister?
Not right away. My husband was at work at the time, and when he called me on his break, which he didn't know I had gotten my sister's results, and I'm just bawling. I can't make sense of it. And it was like, oh my God, you're just not gonna believe this. And he was shocked. And he was like, are you sure? Are you serious? Like, I'm like, yes. Like, DNA doesn't lie. You know, that's a concrete thing. You know, this is who you are. It's that there's no mistake in this. And so after, I probably waited several days because A, I didn't know how to tell her. B, what's everybody going to think about this? How's everybody going to perceive this? How's everybody going to perceive our mother? What happened? Was this a consensual thing? Was this, you know, all these thoughts just go through your head. Yeah. And it took me, you know, it was probably the better part of, it could have been probably up to a week before I even told my sister, because I just couldn't wrap my head around it. I told people in my immediate family, before I told my sister. I told my daughter, and she was just, she's like, what? You know, my daughter at the time, she was 32, 33. She's like, what? Yeah. She's like, have you told Aunt Nancy? And I'm like, no, I haven't told anybody, because I kept this to myself for a long time, Alexis. I just didn't know how to tell people. Should I tell people? Mm-hmm. So it was a while before I could even muster up the courage to tell anybody.
And so you sat with it for a bit. When you did connect with your sister, what was that conversation like?
At first, I don't think she understood. I don't think she grasped, you know, what I was getting at. And so when I told her, I said, Nancy, I said, got your DNA results back. And I said, you're not going to believe this. I said, we're half sisters. And she said, we're half sisters. And I said, yeah. I said, so she's still thinking this when I'm telling her we got her DNA results back. She's, you know, we're still thinking that it's dad, that, you know, obviously. And I said, Nancy, it's not dad. It's mom. Apparently, truthfully, have a different father. And she said, are you sure? I said, yes, I'm sure. Don't really remember how the whole gist of the conversation went, but she immediately starts thinking of about people that it could have potentially have been. So when I was born, you know, she was about 20. And so she was trying to think about how things were in that stage of everybody's life. And she obviously remembered me being born and things like that. But so she's trying to wrap her head around it, where, like, how and where this, you know, how this happened, you know? And mm-hmm. So there was a lot of shock, and I couldn't bring myself to tell anybody. And so after I told my sister, and a few close friends, I just didn't know what to do at that point. And where do I go from here? People ask me, like, were you angry? How did you feel? And I'm like, you know, I can't say that I was angry. I felt a little lost, maybe. You know, I didn't have a bad childhood growing up. I mean, and I think part of that, when you lose your father at such a young age and you don't have your father growing up with you and you don't have that long time of a bond with your parent, you know, so I don't say that there was a disconnect. My dad and I were very close. We did a lot of things together that apparently he didn't do with my other brothers and sisters, you know, when they were growing up. And so maybe I was doted on a little bit more, you know, as the late in life child and that sort of thing. So, and I adored my dad. He was a drinker. And I didn't like that. And that kind of resonated into me. And, you know, as far as the heavy drinkingness that went on, it bothered me a lot. But I had to do a lot of soul searching and to figure out what my next steps were going to be. And do I tell anybody? How do I tell anybody? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So what did you decide to do next?
I still have, you know, there's my sister, my brother, and I. My brother was really, really close to my mom. And it worried me how people were going to perceive this. It worried me because the last thing I ever wanted was for there to be any kind of negativity towards my mom and what may or may not have happened and, you know, and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, my brother, you know, I live just outside of Louisville, and my brother lives much closer to my mom at the time. And so when she needed, you know, to go to the doctors and, you know, just things like that, that him and my sister-in-law were the ones always, you know, to make sure she got where she needed to go. So when I called him to tell him this, I was a mess. And, and he knew that, you know, I was doing DNA research. He knew I was building a family tree and things like that. And I think there was a great sense of surprise there from him and from all of us. I mean, it was just nothing we saw that could have ever been a part of our family dynamic.
Right.
And, you know, so it was a much of a surprise to him.
Were you curious at that point? Did you want to figure out who your biological father is?
Oh, yeah. So I finally got around to telling my aunt, and several months went by before I told my aunt. And my aunt lives in Arizona, actually. She lives in Mesa. She's the baby of all of my mom's siblings. I asked her, you know, did mom ever confide in you in anything? You know, told her what happened. And she's like, no, but you know, us living so far apart, you know, that may be why she never did, you know, that sort of thing. And so she knew nothing. And she at first, you know, didn't understand how DNA worked either. And she's like, are you sure? She's like, you know, and I'm like, no, this is true, you know? So I was on a mission. Like I was damn determined to find out, who is this person? Are they still alive? Like, do they have children? Then the wheels start spinning. Like, I got to find out who this person is. And then I kind of started doing the math and I thought, well, you know, if they are still alive, they're going to be up in their 90s. The odds, you know, probably they're not going to be alive, which didn't prevent me from trying to find out. But it was funny. So my uncle, my mom's brother, lives in Indiana. So finally, after I talked to my aunt in Arizona, I talked to my uncle. One of the first things she tells me, my uncle's wife, my aunt, she's like, you know, when you were growing up, we always wondered why you didn't look like your other brothers and sisters.
Mm.
And I was like, what? Like, nobody ever said that to, you know? And I'm like, I kind of laughed, but I was like, well, damn, did everybody think that?
Yeah. You know? These unspoken kind of wondering. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I had started like building our family tree. And, you know, as a lot of us do, there are a lot of free sites out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I started with my heritage. Found some really interesting things on my mom's family. I'm actually a direct descendant of a gentleman by the name of John Wagner. who was a bodyguard of General George Washington in the Revolutionary Army.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was really, you know, some really cool information. So, you know, so I started building this family tree with my heritage. And then a coworker of mine, whose wife is a genealogist, she told me about a family free site called FamilySearch.org, which is, you know, ran by the Mormon Church. You get a lot of information. It's a very large database. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had started building my family tree from that because, I mean, they've got records for days, as you well know. And so I kind of was building my family tree from that as well. So with both websites, I was kind of using those. I go back to the people from 23andMe who had messaged me. And I'm like, okay, so update. I've now found out a whole another side of everything. I'm trying to see if I could possibly locate who this biological father might be. So the lady that I matched to in Louisiana, she says, well, I'm not really into genealogy, but there's another cousin who is. And I was like, okay. And she tells me her name is Natalie. And I see Natalie on my, you know, my list of people I'm related to. So she was very helpful. She's like, well, I see you're related, blah, blah, blah. Her percentage and ours were, it was much smaller, but she starts giving me a bunch of surnames, which are all like names I don't have any idea who they are. On, I think it was MyHeritage, I spoke to a genealogist. I saw a person, you know, you spend a little bit of money, whatever, and you talk to somebody, they look at your DNA results, they try to help you match up and help you kind of steer your way through everything. I was really determined. I wanted to find out who this person was. And it was just like pedal to the metal. I may not ever find out, you know, but I was going to try and see what I could find. After I speak to this genealogist, and she tells me, you know, this lady I matched to in Louisiana, it's like 10-something%. She said, and I may be a little bit wrong in how I'm saying it, but basically the gist of it was, she said, she's likely a first cousin or maybe a first cousin once removed. She said, it's a higher number. It's not a number I see all the time, she said, but, you know, it's in that vicinity is like first cousins once removed. And I'm like, this lady's a first cousin. And I'm like, you know, I can't even, it's still such a bizarre thing for me to accept. So she said, if you can go back and find her maternal line and any, I think with her grandfather or something, and find any male children that she would have had, one of those is most likely your biological father. I'm like, whoa. okay. So that was, again, it's just kind of like, I don't say a kick in the head, but it's just like, it was very overwhelming.
It's really real at that point. Yeah.
Very real at that point. She gives me like some suggestions and what to do. So I go back to the Family Search website and I start plugging in names, and I didn't really hit on anything. But I go back to Natalie and I tell her what she's told me. And she said, well, how about I let you see our family tree on Ancestry? So, you know, like they'll let you share, you know, with someone, you can't edit anything, but you know, you can see. And I'm like, In that conversation, we get to talking. I find out she's a nurse, and I tell her like, why I did my DNA? And I said, you know, I have this bleeding disorder. It's kind of a rare kind of thing. And she says, oh, do you have von Willebrand? And I'm like, no. I said, but it mimics itself as von Willebrand's. And we talk about it. It's a platelet dysfunction. And she goes, my son has that.
Wow.
Oh, okay. I said, well, you know, it's kind of funny. I was told it was genetic, and we always wondered, it probably came from my dad's side of the family, but there was nobody else in the family had it. But now I see yeah, it's my dad's family. It's yeah. not the dad that I thought, you know. And so she was really helpful. And so she gives me the link and I look at her ancestry account and I find the cousin. I go back and I find all these names and, you know, there's a lot of them. And just like one by one, I would go back to the family search website and just seeing if there's any information out there. And I'm thinking, you know, it's a shot in the dark. You know, you don't know if you're ever going to find anything or not. It's just the needle in the haystack kind of thing. And I just kept running into dead end after dead end. I really wasn't having much luck. And I was getting kind of discouraged. And I thought, well, it is what it is. Maybe it's not meant for me to find out. You know, maybe it's a secret that's just going to become a secret and it's going to stay a secret. But I didn't want to give up, you know, because then it's like, you got to find out, you know, your drive and, or at least with me, my drive to uncover what I could find. I was like, I'm my own little investigator here and I'm going to see what I can find. I'm not going to quit until I can get an answer or yeah. if every end is a dead end, then so be it. But I'm going to try to find and look for every clue I can until I can get an answer.
What happened next? I mean, how were you ultimately able to figure out who your biological father was?
So after probably a couple of weeks of searching, I would go back to the family search site. I came across a marriage certificate to a couple here in Louisville back in, I want to say like in the 30s, I guess. And that was the only thing that I ever ran across that even had a tie to Kentucky, much less Louisville, Kentucky, into Kentucky. And in Family Search, when people upload information and you can attest that this information is factual and you have an account built up, you know, there's like an email address or there's some sort of like information where you could reach out to this person or the individual that uploaded the information.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, after all this time, again, you know, you're trying to uncover every little thing. So I emailed this person and in the email, I explained to him my name and what I've discovered. And I know I'm a member of this family by some association, blah, blah, blah. If you might happen to have any kind of information that you could be willing to share with me, I would be forever grateful. Leave my phone number, my email address, and I go on my way. And about, I leave work, it's like 20, 30 minutes later, I get a phone call. And it's a phone call from Georgia. I'm like, well, I don't know anybody in Georgia either, so I'm thinking it's a spam call. Almost didn't answer it, but I did. And gentleman on the phone, he says, well, I'm the person you emailed on the Family Search website. And I was like, oh, I'm thinking, dang, that was fast. And he said, well, my family lived in Louisville, and he proceeds to tell me that his dad was in the Army, no ties to my mom. Fort Knox is, you know, 45 minutes-ish from the Louisville area of where we lived. My mom, to my knowledge, had never been to Fort Knox. So he tells me they lived, you know, off base, tells me a lot about his dad. He fought in World War II. He was gotten an on-field commission by Patton and, you know, all these things. And I'm like, well, that's great. Still, there's no tie to Fort Knox. They lived in an area not far from where we lived at the time. But again, my mom didn't drive either. She was at home raising kids. You know, she had, my dad worked, he worked like a swing shift kind of job. And then everything, we talked for like 15 or 20 minutes and nothing matched up to, and there would be a connection to my mom or to my dad or anybody. I was like, well, I said, I'm sorry. I said, I guess, you know, it's just another dead end. I thanked him for his time. And right before we hang up, and I don't even know, Alexis, like, I don't even know what provoked me or what even thought for me to even ask him this. But I'm a bowler and I was raised in a bowling center. And so I asked him, by any chance, did your parents bowl? Like, by any, you know, like for recreation or just whatever? And he said, well, yeah, as a matter of fact, they did. And I thought, oh my God. I said, do you remember the names of where they may have bowled? And he tells me the name of the bowling center. And had I not been sitting in my car, I would have fainted. I know I would have fainted because it just felt like all the blood just left my body. And I said, oh my God. And I said, my mom bowled there. She worked there. It was about a mile from our home at the time. And a lady across the street had introduced her to bowling. So when she'd go to bowl, the neighbor would pick my mom up and they'd go to bowl or whatever. And she ended up working there years later. And I'm like, I just put my hands in my face and I told the gentleman, I said, this might be a real stretch. I said, but I don't know. Maybe you might be my half brother. And he kind of laughed and he said, well, I wouldn't be surprised. Mm. And I thought, oh. And I said, really? And then he said, yes. And I had to go. I said, well, can we finish this conversation later? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. So, and then all the emotions just kind of overwhelm you again. And, you know, and you're just thinking how all this kind of came into play. And it just was so, also surreal again and emotional. And, but then I felt like, okay, I've got a potential lead here, you know? So he called me back later and we talked a little bit more. So we ultimately ended up taking another DNA test on Ancestry because he had an account on Ancestry. So he takes his and I take mine and it comes back that we're half brother and sister. So before that even came, that result came back. We had talked a few times and the whole time, and I don't ever want to say anything to them, but he talks about their time that they lived here in Louisville and his dad was transferred from Louisville to Georgia right before I was born. So did this person even know that it was his child? Did this person even, I mean, I feel like he probably knew my mom was pregnant because I'm sure they probably still bowled and, you know, all that kind of thing. And did he ever know about me? My thought process thinking is probably no, he didn't. But the whole time before we got those DNA results back, my half brother and I, we talked a few times and I'm just kind of thinking, you know, I'll bet you this is it. I'll bet you it just in my head, I kind of just felt like he's my brother.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to say anything, you know, like you don't want to jump the gun and I don't want to be presumptuous and ask something that, you know, is not correct or right to ask. So I had sent him a picture of my mom. It was a picture when she was on her 90th birthday. He goes, I remember her. Mm. So my brother would have been about 14 to 15 years old at the time. And he said, oh, I remember her very well. He said, I would have remembered her at whatever age she was, whatever picture you would have sent to me. He said, she was so nice to me. She would bring me something to drink. She'd bring me popcorn, you know, whatever. When my mom started bowling, when her friend introduced her to bowling, she really liked it. She didn't do a lot outside the home. And I think that was kind of a night out for her. It was enjoyment. My dad never, you know, he wasn't into that kind of thing. And then later on, she started working there. She started coaching kids and teaching them how to bowl. And she started leagues and she ran tournaments. And so she was very involved in the community as far as, you know, the bowling community at the time. And so I can see her being friendly and, you know, being nice to the kids that are there and that sort of thing. But he told me, he said, I remember her. And I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, he said, you know, obviously you're not going to know him. He said, but I'll send you a picture of my dad. And I said, okay. And Alexis, I was sitting there. He sends me a picture of his dad. My husband and I are sitting in the living room. And when I tell you I gasped. And I just went, and he goes, what? And I just turned my phone and I look and I show it to my husband. He said, you don't need a DNA test. And I said, nope. I don't. I look just like him.
Wow. How did it feel to see your reflection back at you?
Oh my God, I started crying. And then you just get all these emotions, and it's just like, and I'm sure the audience can understand this, it's just so overwhelming. And I said, you know, I told him then, I said, I don't need a DNA test. I said, I'm 99% sure that you're my brother, my half brother. He said, really? Because I hadn't seen a picture of him, nor had he seen a picture of me at this point. I said, yeah. I said, there's so many distinct features.
So you did end up getting that confirmation that this is your brother. Did you continue building your relationship after that? And did you connect with any more family?
Yes. So, it was a few weeks after that, we got the confirmation, and, he called me and he says, well, hello, sister. And I was like, well, hi, brother. And I find out I have another sister. There was another brother who had passed away. My biological father had died, in 1985. He, like my dad, was a very heavy drinker. He had cirrhosis, and I think he developed cancer of the liver or cirrhosis of the liver, something to that nature. My brother was very, I want to say, excited that he to learn that he had a sibling. I hadn't talked to my sister at that point. So my brother had made it a point to come to Louisville, and we could meet. Him and his wife drove up from Georgia, and we met at a restaurant here locally. My husband, my daughter, my brother here, his name is Dan, and his wife, we all met at a restaurant here and brought some pictures, and it was a very pleasant evening. Everybody was happy to meet other people, happy that there was we found a resolution, that we had a confirmation, and we've stayed in contact. Actually, I was just down there at Christmas, and it's been a really good experience, and it's been a blessing, honestly, you know, because sometimes when you find things out like this, it's not always good.
Right.
And sometimes it can be very hurtful. It can be very sad. While I don't know why things happened the way they happened, it's irrelevant at this point. You know, DNA is such a thing too, where, you know, I mean, gosh, they're solving murders, and, you know, and people are somewhat skeptical about doing it. But, you know, I was very fortunate that I had a good outcome. It was a really trying time. It was, God, an emotional time. And then you think back about, did my dad know? Did my mom know? Did she know that I wasn't Charles's dad, but that I was, my biological father's name is Lee?
Yeah, I'm curious to ask, you know, what are your feelings about your mom after learning all of this?
Well, to know my mom, she's just a great, great, great mother. I was such a brat as a kid. But she was such a wonderful person, and that was part of the reason, you know, how is someone going to be perceived and knowing that you had a child outside of their marriage? And I didn't want my mom being perceived in a negative light. And for the longest time, like I said, we didn't tell anybody. And even at this point, when I meet my brother, I hadn't told everybody. I hadn't told my aunt and my uncle. I hadn't told my nieces and nephews that are, you know, that I have. And I wasn't ready to tell anybody that yet. In my heart and in my head, you know, I have conversations with my mom, and for whatever reason, she chose not to tell anybody. For whatever reason, she had to keep this to herself. Did she even know that I wasn't Charles's daughter? Did she know when I was born? I want to think that I don't think she did. Mm-hmm. But as I got older, and as much as I resemble Lee, I can't help but think she had to have known that I was Lee's child and not my dad, Charles.
Yeah.
I wasn't ever mad. I wasn't ever angry. My daughter asked me, she said, Mom, what would you say to Grandma if she were still alive? And I'm thinking, I don't know. You know, at the end of her life, nothing was ever said. So hence the title of my book. But yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. So, for listeners, what is the name of your book and where can they find it?
So my book is called My Family Tree, Taken to the Grave. And it's on Amazon. There is a paperback version and a Kindle version. I came up with that title because literally Mom took it to her grave. And there's a lot more in the book. It's a short read, but there's a lot more in the book that talks about my mom's life and my dad's life and things that we haven't discussed here today, obviously. But it is available on Amazon. And if you have Kindle, if you have the monthly subscription, it's free on Kindle. So
yeah, and I'll be sure to link it in the show notes. But I want to ask, you know, why was it important to you to document your story?
You know, somebody had asked me once when I tell the whole story, because there's, you know, a lot here that we really haven't touched on yet, but there were so many coincidental things that happened. And I talk about the Family Search website. My brother, my new brother, who is Mormon, has a lot to do with that family website. And when we talked about that, there were just so many little things that kind of pieced things together. And when I told people the story, they're like, oh, you know, you should write a book about all this. This is so exciting and so interesting. I'm like, I hardly read books, much less am I going to be able to write one. But I found it so therapeutic, and maybe that's kind of cliche, but it was so helpful to write down what happened, how things happened, the emotions of what you feel, what goes through your head, what goes through your thoughts and your emotions of everything that you learn and discover. Like I said, I was 59 years old when I found this out.
Well, I don't think it's cliche to say that writing is therapeutic, because I do think it's so helpful for us to tell our stories, right? And I did read the book and I was struck by some of those coincidences, specifically the Family Search website. And isn't that how so many of us are able to put our pieces together, right? It's just these coincidences and luck that, you know, for you, your brother happened to be very involved with that website, and therefore there was more documentation for you to find. And I think it's fascinating how these stories come together.
It's been a blessing. It really, truly has. Something that just basically shook us to the ultimate core. It just really just nobody saw coming. And to now I have another family, and a lot of them came up a year and a half ago, and both sides of my family got to meet. And I talk about that in the book and how amazing that was.
It really is.
Yeah. A local TV station, you know, they happened to be here, and a lot of that I owe thanks to 23andMe. So a big, you know, shout out to them. But it was just such a remarkable day that my family was here, all the ones that pretty much live here in Louisville, and then most of my new family, they made the journey up, and we spent the whole day, and it was just that piece of that puzzle now is all together, and it was just such a fascinating beginning of a story that none of us knew was there, you know?
Yeah. I'm really interested in your perspective on this, because you have had such a wonderful ending to your story, although I suppose it's never ending, right? But
right.
Where things are now is so positive. And you do have so much compassion, I think, for all of the parents involved in this situation.
Yeah.
What advice would you have for a parent who is keeping a DNA surprise from their child?
Ooh, you know, that's hard. I think ultimately, you know, it's as the saying goes, the truth shall set you free. It's hard to fathom where a parent would be in that point in their life. Do you tell this child, hey, I've got something I need to tell you? Do you bear that in your soul and your heart? And do you take that to your grave? Or do you take it and let that child know? You got to think about, why are you holding that in? Or why is it that you've been scared to tell that child? I think ultimately I would have to tell them for a variety of reasons, but I think the main thing is I think the child has a right to know. And, you know, and maybe that might not always be true with every scenario. And maybe I'm looking at it from my perspective, but I think if you have that opportunity, and I think if you have that good relationship, especially with your child, that you feel like, hey, there's something I got to tell you. And it was this, this, and this happened. And, you know, if you just spell out the whole thing, you know, is it going to be emotional? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Is there going to be some hurt feelings? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, is it going to make things better? And then depending again on the situation, I mean, if it was a bad situation to begin with, you know, and this person, and you know who that person is, and if it's not a great thing, maybe that's something you shouldn't do. But I think every story or every person's situation is different. But I think, you know, you have to really look into that and weigh that out and tell that child that, you know, that might be something you need to discuss with them. But again, every situation is different.
Yeah. What advice do you have for someone who just uncovered a DNA surprise?
First of all, just take a moment and get your thoughts together. Don't jump to any rash decisions. And it's okay to be angry. It's okay to be emotional. It's all of those feelings that you have inside that are, you know, pent up inside of you. It's okay. It is so, this is not something you expected. It's not your fault. You know, it's okay. But I don't jump to, don't be rash in any decision making. Just take some time, take the time to get your thoughts together and how you want to approach this. Try not to be irrational. Keep a level perspective, a level thought on your head of where do I go with this and how do I need to approach this to my father or my mother?
Yeah, that's great advice. Well, Sherry, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your story. I'm so happy that you've had an amazing journey and made amazing connections. It's always nice to hear those positive stories in the DNA surprise world.
It is. I appreciate the opportunity to share my story and thank you so much for having me on here.
Thanks again to Sherry for sharing her story. If you have a DNA surprise story that you'd like to share, please email dnasurprises@gmail.com. Until next time.